This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Okay, well, a lot of things. This is going to be a fun day. First, I'm going to go back and look at some two of my favorite interviews, but on Tuesday, I had a fun day here. I had to talk the entire time because I didn't have any guests. It was very funny. The author who was supposed to be on, unfortunately, got her time zones wrong. She's in Alaska. And so she wrote this wonderful book called Epic Solitude. And so you know, it's funny. Her name is Catherine Keith. And so I'm waiting for her to come on, and Ed's waiting in the control room. No call. And we didn't have a backup number for her. Now, normally I have a backup number because we've had this a few times with people in California. They sleep late. And so Ed had nobody to call. I had nobody to call. And so we're waiting. And so Catherine Keith, as I said, she wrote this book. It's called Epic Solitude. And it comes out at a time here where we're talking. It's sort of a timely release because it's coming up to Women's Day, the month of Women's Day, the 48th annual 1,000 Iditarod dog sled race, and the 37th annual 1,000-mile Yukon quest. Now, Catherine has been involved in all of those. And so we wanted to have a timely release. We wanted to talk to her right, you know, around the time that all of this was happening in her life. So, unfortunately, Alaska is in the time zone. I don't know what time zone it is. Anyway, I guess they have their own time zone. Ed, did she call in finally an hour late, or did anybody answer the phone? Or she just finally realized that, oh boy, she made a mistake. Anyway, she's an absolutely delightful person, and the book is fascinating. And I'm going to have her back. Which day I'm trying, because what I did is, because of the timeliness of it, I wanted her to be on, you know, right now. So I readjusted my Thursday schedule. and moved somebody off of the Thursday, and she was supposed to be on again today. And then last night, I get this urgent text message, email. She has to fly out to someplace there up, I guess, for the 1,000-mile Yukon run. Anyway, with all the mess of that, she's not going to be on today either. So, but you know, sometimes things are beshert. They're just meant to be. And so it gave me an opportunity to do something that I've been wanting to do. Look back through my treasure, are all the wonderful interviews I've had with authors. So I was thinking, who would I want to start with? Well, I want to start with somebody who's made a big impact in my life. She's been absolutely wonderful to me. This author, first of all, my sister is the one who sort of led me to this author. My sister, Natalie, is, we all call her in the writing community around here, everybody calls her the connoisseur of mysteries, and everybody wants, like, her thumbs up. What does Natalie think of that book? What does Natalie think of that book? Because everybody knows that, first of all, she loves mysteries, and the other thing is that she should have been an editor because she catches mistakes. And so for quite a few authors, she's read them before they put them out there to be published for indie authors, because my sister, I mean, there's not a spelling mistake, a grammar mistake. She really should have been a big-time New York City editor because she is just so good at that kind of thing. Anyway, so she led me to Carolyn Hart. And I was reading Carolyn Hart over the years before I started the program. And then when I started the program, she was my fourth guest on the program. And I want to tell you, this is a wonderful, wonderful woman, because after the program, she sent me two boxes filled with CDs and autographed books to share with my listeners and to share with the people that I meet at writers' meetings. So I particularly love Carolyn Hart. And, of course, she's a mystery writer of America Grandmaster. And she's going to be on again in August. She has a new book coming out, and it's going to be really great. And I'm going to talk a little bit about it afterwards. But it's called Ghosts Up Her Game, and it's one of her Bailey Ruth ghost mysteries. And you can pre-order it. One of the nicest things you can do for an author, if you like an author, always pre-order their books, because it really, what the heck, it impresses the publisher. That's what you always want to do. So you can pre-order Ghosts Up Her Game. It's just go to Amazon and order it. And it's, of course, going to be a wonderful book. But here is just part of the one-hour interview I did. And this is about 17 minutes of the interview. And we'll play this. And when I come back, then we're going to have a wonderful interview that I had with an Olympic gold medal winner. So you must stay tuned for that too. Ed, go ahead and let's play this interview with Carolyn. Well, I'm so thrilled to welcome back to Joy on Paper a mystery writer of America Grandmaster, Carolyn Hart, the author of two of the most popular mystery series, Death on Demand and Bailey Ruth Ghost Stories. Hi, Carolyn.
Hello, Patsy. How are you this morning?
Oh, great. It's so wonderful to have you back.
Thanks.
Today, we're going to talk about a lot of things, but we'll talk first about your newest release, Ghost Times 2. It's another one of the Bailey Ruth mysteries, and it's fantastic.
Well, thank you very much. I really had fun writing it. It's a love story, and I really loved it.
Well, you know, I always love the description of Bailey Ruth as being the ghostly gumshoe. I think that's perfect, because let's tell my listeners about Bailey Ruth, because she is such a clever character. She's departed, but never far away.
That's right. Bailey Ruth Rayburn is late of Adelaide, Oklahoma, and she and her husband, Bobby Mack, were out in the Gulf, and he loved to chase and fish for tarpon. And there was a huge storm, and their motor cruiser went down. But in heaven, she has enjoyed, of course, heavenly things, which she's not really supposed to share too much when she comes back to Earth. But she wanted always to come back to Earth to help someone in trouble. So one day, she applied at the Department of Good Intentions, which sends emissaries to Earth to help someone in dire straits. And ever since, she has been returning. And this time, she comes back, and her task is to encourage a very handsome young ghost, Jimmy, to climb those golden stairs to heaven. But he doesn't want to leave the Earth because he's still in love with Megan. And that is our story. And, of course, when Megan gets in serious trouble and is accused of murder, why Jimmy and Bailey Ruth have to come to her rescue.
They do. And it, as you said, it's a love story. It's a double love story, because it's one of the past and one of the future. As always, it's told so beautifully by you. You have this amazing ability to develop characters. Of course, everybody loves Bailey Ruth. One of the lovely things about her is that she likes fashion, and this makes heaven a very, very lovely place for her.
It does indeed, because as a ghost, she has the ability to change what she's wearing in an instant. She simply thinks of what she wants to wear, and she is, so that's what she's wearing.
She doesn't have to dig in the closets and doesn't have to iron anything. She can just wear what she wants.
Exactly, and you know, and she loves shoes. She, you know, is especially fond of a pair of heels with a little scarab on the strap. So she is usually beautifully turned out.
And this is the seventh book in the series. Over the years, you've really put her into some very interesting and fun mysteries, and she always comes through, and it's a wonderful thing about these stories.
Well, I always wanted to write about a happy, cheerful ghost. I mean, this idea that ghosts are dragging, clanking chains, and it always gets really freezing cold if there's a ghost present, and there's a malevolent presence. And I thought, you know, there's lots of lovely people who have died. Why not have one of them be your ghost? And I suppose, inspired by the Topper books, which came out a long, long time ago. But many people would remember Topper who is not the ghost, but Marion and George Kirby are the ghosts who come back to interfere in his life, and they're very fun books.
They are delightful characters, just as Bailey Ruth is, and of course, Wiggins. Tell us about Wiggins. I like Wiggins.
Wiggins is the supervisor of the Department of Good Intentions, and he ran a train station in the early 1900s when he was on Earth. And he actually died during World War One. He was an ambulance driver. But he's a very loving person but very, very much by the book. You know, once all the rules followed. And Bailey Ruth, as he well understands, is very impulsive. And so when she first is recruited, he shares with her the rules for emissaries, as he prefers to call them, not ghosts, returning to Earth, what they're supposed to do and not do when they're on Earth. And, of course, one of the great rules is do not become visible. And, of course, Bailey Ruth is always popping into visibility, but there's always a good reason.
Well, she has to show her newest outfit.
That's true. She has to, you know, kind of share things with
them. Isn't it a joy to be able to create a world like that?
I really enjoyed it, and I think, you know, I do feel that it is an original kind of book. I don't know of any other series of books about a ghost that have someone coming back from heaven to deal with matters on Earth. Except maybe the closest thing would be Mignon Ballard's Angel series. And those books are quite wonderful. She's a South Carolina writer.
I think the Bailey Ruth are just great, it's one aspect of mystery writing where you can have a comedy, you know, you can have fun. I think it's great for readers. And, you know, Agatha Christie always said that reading mysteries, it was good for people and useful for people to read mysteries.
Oh, definitely. And, of course, the thing about it is murder is never funny. You know, that is an example of what happens when, you know, anger and jealousy and greed and those sorts of attitudes take control of lives and cause someone to lose life. But people are always funny, you see. So there is the distinction. People say, well, how can you write a mystery that's funny? Well, it's not hard at all because people are funny. And you can always have a lighthearted view. And Agatha Christie was quite right, because she saw the mystery as the equivalent of the medieval morality play. And what she said was that the mystery, you know, represented what happens when people commit sin. And so I think that mysteries are much more profound than a great many critics like to say.
Back in 1985, when I think you had a couple of unpublished books piling up, did you ever imagine that you would be not just a mystery writer of America Grandmaster, but that you would have won so many prizes? I can't even, it would take a half an hour to list all of the prizes you've won, but I know that it's just one after another. The Agatha, the Anthony, the Amelia, you've won all of these awards. Did you imagine that back in 1985?
Oh, no, never. I mean, never. And as a matter of fact, I remember several years ago, I received a call. I had missed a call. I'd been out doing my errands, and I thought it was a call from the Southwest chapter of Mystery Writers of America, and I thought, oh, they want me to be on a committee or something, you know, so I returned the call, and it turned out that it wasn't that at all, that I was told that I had been named a Grand Master, and I just simply stood there, and I finally said, are you serious? You know, it was beyond my greatest imagination. And in fact, it just never occurred to me that it could happen.
Well, you certainly deserve it, not just because of your fantastic writing, but also I think you embody so much of what mystery writers are. They're very helpful to each other. They're very encouraging to each other. And no one has been more encouraging than you.
Well, I appreciate that, but I always feel that I received a great deal of encouragement along the way. People were kind to me, and I do think that mystery readers, mystery readers too, as a matter of fact, but I think mystery writers are truly wonderful people. Most of them are very generous and very kind.
Well, in your other famous series, Death on Demand, you are, it's a perfect series because it is set in a bookstore, Death on Demand. The owner of the bookstore, Annie Darling, of course, loves books and loves mystery books. And as part of the storyline, you're always able to bring in other mystery writers and talk about other mystery writers. I think that you have led many readers to other writers, which is fantastic.
Well, it's absolutely a pleasure, and Death on Demand has given me over the years the opportunity to celebrate wonderful, wonderful, wonderful mysteries, many that people would not now be aware of. But thankfully, with the internet, almost anything is available very inexpensively. You know, you can go online and find writers who were wonderful, say Pamela Branch. Of course, she's been reprinted also by Rue Morgue Press, but she's a perfect example of a wonderful mystery writer who would not be widely known today. And she's among one of my very favorite writers because she has the wildest, craziest imagination that anyone ever had. She only wrote about 5 books, but I highly recommend them for anyone who has a fondness for macabre humor. But there's so many writers like that, you know, Manning Coles in England, and a lot of people would not be aware of Josephine Tay today, and no one ever wrote better mysteries than Josephine Tay when you're talking about character studies.
One of the writers that I discovered by reading one of your books was Mike Resnick.
Oh, yes.
I had not read his book. You mentioned him, so I went and read his book, and then I discovered not only did he write a great mystery, but he was writing fantastic sci-fi work, and I have become such a major Mike Resnick fan, all because of you.
Oh, well, I'm delighted, you know, because if people go to my website, there is a list of all the books mentioned throughout the series, and one of the little sidebars lists the books that have been mentioned in the past. You know, bookstores are such wonderful places. I mean, my delight in life has been the many, many bookstores I've had the opportunity to visit, and, of course, the wonderful libraries. I mean, you know, libraries are perhaps the greatest gift the American people ever gave themselves. I think a lot of Americans don't realize that in many countries, there's no place that provides you with books to read. You know, I mean, it's really a remarkable achievement.
And we always have to thank Benjamin Franklin.
Yes, we do.
We do, because now I cannot go into a library. I'm banned. I'm not joking. I haven't had a library card for 30 years because it's too dangerous. Because if I take a book out, somehow I believe that book belongs to me. Actually, there is a university where my son had a library card, and a very famous university. I won't say where it is, because they were getting rid of books. I mean, literally getting rid of books without selling them or without offering them to the public.
Oh my goodness.
I would go there and the books would be disappearing and I'd say, where are they? And they say, oh, we dumped them. We got rid of them. At one point, I actually stole several books that I thought, you know, they're going to throw out because they were going through them and they were looking at the back and they were saying, well, this hasn't been checked out since 1952. Throw it out. Mm-hmm. Well, sorry, that doesn't mean it's not a good book, you know.
Well, and you know, that might mean that Pearl Buck book could be thrown out.
Exactly. Oh, they threw out some absolutely wonderful books, so I just took them. That's why I'm banned from library.
Okay.
Thank you, Carolyn, for being on today.
Well, thank you for having me.
We're going to talk a little bit about The Fine Art of Murder. It's a book that every mystery writer should get, and every mystery reader who loves to know more about the story behind the books, which is what I love to do, should. Isn't it a beautiful book?
It is. It is beautifully produced, and I do think the essays are wonderful. I will have to confess, I haven't looked at it in a long time.
Well, you know, that's a wonderful thing about the internet is we can find these books that are long out of print, and it is. Now, this particular one, it's a big book, a giant book, and it has a beautiful cover, and it's just... In this book, they really talk about all the different type of writers. And I thought, because you're so familiar with the mystery writers, some of the mystery writers that people might not have gotten to, and that they should read because they're just fun or intriguing or really add to your knowledge of mystery writing.
Right, right. Well, there are so many. There are so many wonderful authors. You know, I would hardly know where to start. I mean, obviously, the list of books on my website would certainly be a start for people. But gosh, I really don't know even really where to start. I think.
Well, let's start with Wilkie Collins. That's
okay.
I like
The Moonstone.
Yes.
And you know, of course, it was such a great creator of atmosphere. You know, I think that was the hallmark of his work. And then we would go to, of course, Agatha Christie. And you know, it always amazes me. And I won't fuss too much about it. I'm not very fond of the term cozy for mysteries. It was originally meant as a pejorative by Raymond, and it was in an essay Raymond Chandler wrote. And what his point was that, you know, well, what could ever happen in these little domestic... and, of course...
Little did he know.
Little did he know. I mean, you know, so much of the trauma in life is in small domestic scenes, as almost everyone knows. And I think, in a way, it is a bit of a denigration there. You know, when you talk about cozy mysteries, you're usually saying... Well, these mysteries are fun to read, but there are a great many books, some of the Annie and Max books, are much more serious books, and I much prefer the term traditional mystery.
Okay.
Because the traditional mystery, you know, is exploring the passions of ordinary people. And that is what, you know, the hard-boiled writers are saying, well, you've got to be rough and tough and out in the mean streets. But most of us do not live in the mean streets. We live in communities, and that is what the traditional mystery explores. I certainly would agree that my Bailey Ruth books can well be termed cozies because they are lighthearted, but although the crime is always treated seriously. But the majority of the books I have written, I would describe them as traditional mysteries.
Well, okay. Well, we will do that then from now on.
Okay.
Of course, there are... So many different types. There's also the suspense mystery.
Exactly.
And there is a Victoria Holt book that I can't remember the name of it, but for years after I read that book, I was sort of haunted by a couple of scenes in that book.
Oh, exactly. And you know, Rebecca by Daphne du Maurier is a perfect example of a book that can haunt someone because it's just almost eerie, the sense that she creates and the darkness at that house at Manderley. You know?
Oh.
Well, Alastair MacLean was a marvelous suspense novelist. He wrote about five of the best suspense novels I've ever read, and then toward the end of his career, I don't know whether it's because he got rich and playful and didn't work at it very hard, the books were not as good. But his World War II suspense novels are absolutely fantastic. John Marcand, the novelist of Manners, was also the creator of Mr. Moto, and he was a Japanese agent who was mostly in China between the two world wars. And if you would like to have a picture of what China was like in the 1930s, the John Marcand Mr. Moto books are simply superb. I mean, there is so much to explore and learn, you know, from mystery.
Bill Pronzini and Marcia Muller, their ones set in San Francisco, are so informative just from the historical point of view, let alone the fantastic mysteries they get into.
And I have to mention, you mentioned San Francisco. I have a book that came out a long time ago that was reprinted a few years ago called Skullduggery. And it's set in San Francisco. I guess it was in the 1980s, maybe. But it has to do with the mystery of the bones of the Peking man that disappeared when Singapore fell. And it also gives a, I think, very realistic view of the Chinese community in San Francisco at that time. And I just have to give it a small plug.
Okay. Go. Thank you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
How many of you listening today yearn to write stories, poems, or novels? Each of you has a story to tell, or knows of a story that others would love to read if only you could put the words on a page. The many writers' clubs in the Bay Area understand this urge and would welcome any new writer to learn with them. So go ahead and take the first step to becoming a well-known author. Sponsored by the Pinellas Writers Club.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back with my next guest.
I'm so happy today to be able to have as a guest someone who I admire so very much and who has brought tears to my eyes because I have cried many times watching this wonderful, wonderful performer. Sonia Richards-Ross is, of course, a gold medal winner for the 400 meters final in the 2012 Olympics. Sonia, it is so wonderful to have you on the program today.
Oh, it's such my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, as I said, you have brought tears to my eyes. So many, when I look back at that 2012 Olympics and just watching you, and of course, knowing that how important it was that you win this race, I love watching track. I could never run myself, but I love watching it. My sister is a great enthusiast, and so she knows all about track, and she just follows it so much. And just seeing you when you won that race, and when you took the American flag and you held it up behind you, tears were pouring down my eyes.
That means so much to me because, you know, that was such a special victory for me. I had wanted to be an Olympic gold medalist since I was 9 years old, and to finally live that moment and to share it with the world and my family and the country, it was just so special. So that means a lot to me that it made you feel the same way I felt.
Oh, I tear up even just thinking about it because it was such a wonderful moment. Of course, you were running next to a Russian, which is also nice.
Yes.
Yeah, there's something nice about beating the Russian, but it was just so wonderful in the way, and you won with such grace and charm and pure joy. I mean, when, you know, the joy is a word that I really love, and I can see it in people. I can see it in their writing, and I can see it when they win things, and wow, you just had that joy. But of course, you have, I think, you know, it's so wonderful. I was so happy that Zonderkid sent me your book because they publish such wonderful books, and they're so often inspiring, and your book is particularly inspiring. Of course, it's
Thank
called
you.
Run With Me, Sonia Richards-Ross, and it's a story of a U.S. Olympic champion, which you are, and,
Thank
you know,
you.
It's just so amazing. We were all heartbroken, of course, when you lost in 2008, but even then, you lost with grace, and you were a champion.
Thank you.
You know, you can be a champion in losing, too, because,
yes.
You know, sometimes some of these people, when they lose, they just look, you know, so bitter. And yet there's something in you that's, I think, very special.
Thanks, Patsy. Thank you so much.
And, well, I think part of it, of course, is your family. Tell us a little bit about your family, because they are, you know, we hear so often about athletes and, the terrible family, or like there might be a mother or there might be a father who pushes them and who's hard on them and miserable. And I've seen that in my own personal life. I homeschooled my kids, and they were in other kind of competitions, not sports, but other competitions. And I could see that in sometimes we'd go to these things and the parents would be really pushy and mean. And I never could do that because I wanted them to have fun with whatever they did. And I just see that in this book you talk about your family. So tell us a little bit about them.
Sure. You know, like you say, Patsy, I was very, very fortunate to have amazing parents and tremendous family support. And I think what separated me from a lot of people was that my parents, even though my mom ran track in high school and my dad was a phenomenal soccer player, they never forced me. They were always just one step behind me. And the more I wanted to do it was the more my dad got into it and got educated. And my mom was my first gym instructor and helped me to figure out how to start lifting weights. But it always just felt like support that came from a loving place and never like they were trying to live their dreams through me. So, you know, I could speak on my parents forever, and I get a chance to do that in the books. But, you know, they really did. They're a huge part of my success and making me always feel that, you know, win or lose, they loved me, but they were always there to support me if I wanted to become the best in the world.
And, of course, a wonderful sister. I know I have a wonderful sister. Her name's Natalie, and she supports me and helps me all the time. And, of course, your sister is fantastic.
Yes. My sister and I are 15 months apart, and we're best friends. And, you know, she was always my loudest supporter and the person who kind of bolstered me up and made me always feel very confident. And, she's still like that today. So, yeah, it's just, you know, I was very fortunate to have really, really good people around me.
Well, you know, of course, most people know the story of that you came from Jamaica. Of course, you were born in Jamaica, and you started running as a child on dirt tracks. There's something about they must feed you something really good in Jamaica that makes all of these wonderful athletes, these runners.
That's right.
What is it? It's a, I don't know. It's a, they should bottle it. I can tell you.
I know. Well, I think, you know, it's funny because track and field is the most popular sport in Jamaica. So I think for many reasons, one, it attracts the best athletes. And then we start at a really young age with really good coaches. So I remember when I migrated to the United States at 12 and I was in middle school for a year, you know, I was so far ahead of the kid. I mean, most of the kids that were running track might have started running that year or, you know, had 1 or 2 years. And I've been running since I was 7 with intense training and, you know, world-class coaches. So I also think that gave me a little bit of an edge when I first moved here. And then, of course, I got to work with some of the best coaches in the world in the United States as well. So I always say I got the best of both worlds.
Well, the wonderful thing about you is that your life hasn't just been track. You have done so much more. Even as a child, you were doing other things, which I think, you know, that's one of the terrible things about if you are in a sport where it takes over your entire life and you don't you don't go to school or you don't have an education, you don't, you know, join other types of groups, but you did.
Yes. And that was always important to my dad. My dad always said to me, you never want to be one-dimensional. And I think even as a young person who, you know, when I was young, track did consume my life. I loved it. I couldn't wait to go to practice. I had all these big goals for myself. But I think my dad always knew, you know, I wouldn't be able to run forever. So it was important for me to try other things, to become passionate about other things. I maintained a 4.0 GPA while I was in high school, 3.5 at the University of Texas. So, yeah, for me, there was always, like, this desire to be good at everything that I did to give myself options after track and field to be able to move on.
Well, of course, one of the things that has been a center to your life, of course, is your religion. Yeah. And I always thought it was so cute that where did you go on your first date and then the next day? tell everyone about this.
Yes, but so it's amazing. So my husband and I met in the cafeteria at the University of Texas. And we actually, so we actually went out to dinner on our first date, but our second date was to church. And that's when I knew he was the one for me. He has a strong faith and has great connection with his family. And, you know, that's, those two things are super important to me. So, yeah, when we went to church together on our second date, I thought, yeah, this is the right guy for me.
I think he's a keeper.
Yes.
You say, okay, you know, there's somebody comes along in your life and he takes you to church the next day. I think that's wonderful. And, of course, in himself, he is a star and a fantastic athlete.
Yes.
And, you know, it's just wonderful what the two of you have done together. I know that, you know, both of you are so involved in doing good works. And in promoting faith and trying to bring people to an understanding that God has an important place in your life.
Absolutely.
So tell us a little bit about some of the things that you like to do to meet children, to encourage them to do well in life.
Absolutely. I mean, I've always, since I guess it's been years, every chance that I get, I take the opportunity to go and speak in high schools or speak in middle schools. I actually started a program in 2006 called the Sanya Fast Track Program, and my first program was in Kingston, Jamaica, and it was a literacy program where we helped young people learn to read on their age group level, because many of the kids were falling behind, and we found really creative ways to incorporate sports and healthy lifestyles, and we helped over 700 kids learn to read on their grade level. So that was one of the most rewarding things that I've done in my career. I've also been a part of USA Track and Field's Win with Integrity program, where we toured all around the country talking to young people about the importance of living life the right way and making the right choices, not taking shortcuts. And so that's been important to me, too. I recently started a Prom Glam program here in Austin. It's a Prom Glam empowerment program. So we go to one of the schools where many of the kids are, you know, not in the best circumstances, and we do a vision board session, we do a community outreach, and then we do the Prom Glam. And I think it's just amazing to see young girls and young guys how, you know, it's definitely not about outward beauty, but there's something that makes people feel so good when they're pampered, they feel cared about, you know, their shoulders go back, their chest pokes out a little bit, and it's just great to see that as well. So as much as my husband and I can, I've had sports clinics all over the country, and so we just do everything that we can. Now that we're not competing, that we're retired, we've been finding new ways to be connected in the community, and hopefully this book, Run With Me, will reach more kids than I can physically reach and inspire them to reach for their goals and be the best that they can be.
Well, I think Zonder Kids, they always do a wonderful job with books, with the publication. They've done a beautiful, the entire layout is wonderful.
I love it too.
Isn't it? It's very well written. You've done a great
job
in the writing.
Thank you.
Make it very readable, and we really want to know your story as we're reading. And I love the little inserts where they have, you know, they have some facts and what Sonia said. I think this is a type of book that you know, kids can really relate to, because I've always discovered that like with young readers, if you have these like these little blocks, this is very clever because they do tend to read them. Then, you know, it's
right.
Like okay, something's in that little square.
Something's
there.
Happening.
Yeah, and I have to read it. And as a matter of fact, then I think they tend to go, after they read the entire book, they tend to go back and read those. And
right.
So I thought it was very clever where they had, well, I love the best first date ever, of course. I just love it. I mean, I read that twice because I think I read it three times because I thought, well, first of all, I mean, she sees Aaron Ross and, you know, like, what a hunk, you know. But, well, and then to discover that first date was so wonderful. But I love all of them. And the inside track where you talk about some of the things that kids who are interested in, who might become interested in racing and don't know too much about it, I think we'll find those, that like the inside track things that you talk about, very interesting.
Yes, and I think that's what we tried to do. I wanted to make the book fun. I wanted it to be, of course, a little bit about my story, my ups and downs, but also educational. And I think we found that perfect blend for young people to learn something, but ultimately be inspired. And there's faith sprinkled in there, too. So hopefully they're curious about that, or, you know, that also, too, sparks their interest, and they understand that should also be a vital part in their lives as well.
Well, it is. You know, what I like, as I said, because of these little blocks of information that are different on different subjects, even you even talk about diet and what your dad, Yeah. I love that one.
Thank you. Yeah, and it's funny because it does take a village. It does take a team of support. And my dad used to love juicing my fruits and vegetables for me. He would always say we get our strength from the earth. And so that taught me a lot about nutrition and diet and the importance of making sure that my diet was colorful and, you know, that I was always eating things in moderation. And so, yeah, you know, he was a huge part of helping with that. And I think it's important for young people to learn about diet as early as possible, because the sooner you know and the better your habits are when you're younger, the better chances you have when you're older to maintain them.
And I can see, you know, kids will read this book and they say, okay, a rainbow colored juice, what is that? You know, but then and to think the mix of spinach and beets and oranges and ginger, and that it can all be, you know, it tastes good.
Yes,
and I hope that
really
inspires
good for you.
It's good for you. And I thought that was so, and I think having these little things like about your dad shows the love that you have for him. And I think that is also inspiring for kids to know that somebody, you know, important and famous still has this warmth and she shares this joy with her father. I think it's delightful.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, and I think that, like you said, it's very important for young people, because I think sometimes as you get older, you think, oh, you want to push away from your parents. But man, my parents have been such an integral part of my career, even now. And I'm so grateful for them. So you don't want to push away from them. You want to push into your parents if you can, you know, because they're always going to love you and have your best interest at heart.
Exactly. And so much, of course, comes from your faith. And I love all the scriptures that you put here. I think, again, these are inspiring. And I hope that the children, when they read the book, they stop and think, okay, you know, It's here. There's something here in the Bible, and when you have these quotes, I hope that it draws them into actually going to their family Bible and reading more.
Absolutely, that's my hope as well.
Well, I am just so honored to talk to you, and I'm so thrilled to be able to really promote this book. I know I'm going to be talking to quite a few readers groups and children's groups this summer, and I want, you know, just promote this book for you, because Run With Me is an inspirational book. It's just also a very good read. It's one of these books that you read, you start, and you just want to go through it and read it and then go back to it, because it is inspiring.
Thank you so much. Thank you. It's just such a pleasure to talk with you, and I really, really appreciate your support.
Well, Sonia, I'm so, as I said, I'm so honored, and I just think about you all the time when I think of Olympics, because it is important that we have people that we can admire. And we certainly, everyone who has seen you in action admires you. And now that we know that you're out there doing so much good for people, and that's so important, you know, instead of getting yourself in gossip columns and all of that bad stuff that so happens to so often to athletes, that you're doing really the Lord's work. And being strong for your family and for your country.
Thank you, Patsy. You made my morning.
Okay. Well, I'm glad. And as I said, thank you again for being on my program. It was a joy for me to talk to you here on Joy on Paper.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, wow. You know, I get such a kick out of these interviews. They really are my treasures, because, you know, it's coming up to 5 years. And so I look back and I think I've spoken to hundreds and hundreds of authors, so many of the authors that I never in my life, in my wildest imagination, thought I would be talking to. And also people like Sonia. I mean, I never thought I'd be talking to an Olympic gold medal winner. So it's so exciting. I've spoken to 9 Mystery Writer of America Grandmasters, and I'm going to add a few more this year. And of course, as I was mentioning, Carolyn Hart is really one of these very, very special authors. And she is not only one of my favorite, but what I love about her is that she does so much to help other authors and encourage other people just to learn about other authors. So you can really do something really nice. Go to Amazon and pre-order her book, because the publishers really do take notice if you pre-order a book. And this new book that's coming up in August, it's called Ghosts Up Her Game, and it's a Bailey Ruth ghost novel. It's one of her ghost novels. And then, of course, if you haven't read her mysteries, now, if you're a writer and you're writing mysteries and you haven't read Carolyn Hart, you're not doing your homework, because she is one of the authors that you absolutely must read. They're brilliant books, and the first one in the series is the Death on Demand series, and the first book is called Death on Demand, and it's an example of how to start a series and keep it going. And she has kept it going for many years, and it's like a course. You could not get a better course in college and university than just reading her books and analyzing how she does it. And of course, she's been a New York Times bestselling author for many, many years. And you can also, as she suggested, go to her website, and it's Carolyn Hart, it's spelled with a Y, and she has a list of all of the authors that she has put in her books. And this is a beautiful thing to do, because so many authors that I had never read and I didn't know about, I discovered by reading her books, because as we talked about, her books are set in a bookstore. And so she has the opportunity to promote a lot of authors. It really, really, it's a wonderful webpage, and also all the list of her books are there. And as for Sonia Richards-Ross, you know, you can go to her webpage. You can also go to Amazon. She's written a couple of books now. All of them are inspirational. All of them are just great for kids. And she is just a wonderful, wonderful person. And if you go to her website, you can see some photos, and really cute photos, of course, of her husband, her baby. And she's just a delightful person. And it's really one of the joys of my life to talk to both of these. And I'm going to upload onto my webpage, which is radio-joy on paper, both of these interviews. And Carolyn's will be much longer, because we actually spoke for an hour on the day that she was here. And when she comes back, we're going to talk for another hour, because there's so much. She is so knowledgeable about mystery writing in general. She certainly, over the years, she's gotten to know so many of the authors. And so she can give us sort of a behind the scenes story about some of the authors that she's known since she became Mystery Writer of America Grandmaster. Woo, isn't that nice? Doesn't that sound great? And so we have, it's just a wonderful, I've just developed a wonderful relationship with her, because, as I said, she is very generous, and she was so kind to send me boxes of books and CDs and to share. And I've shared them over the years. But I do want to, again, thank her, and thank Sonia Richards-Ross. And I'm going to have some more of my best of sort of type things. And I'm still waiting. Catherine Keith will come on, and we will talk about epic solitude and about the Iditarod and about the 1,000-mile Yukon race. She's done it all. She's quite amazing. She's won. She's participated in 8 Ironman competitions, a triathlon competition. So she's quite a fantastic person. So she's going to get on, because I know she was very disappointed on Tuesday, and then even more so today. So we're going to definitely get her on so that we can talk about it. And what else? Oh, I'm thinking about Mystery Writer of American Grandmasters. I, you know, there are a few authors out there that I've, local authors who I've been, you know, reading ever since I started the program. And I want to definitely mention Carol J. Perry, and Carolyn Hart read Carol J. Perry's book, and she recommended it. So you know that Carol J. Perry is a good writer. So you can also check out Carol J. Perry's Witch City Mysteries, and they are, she's on the NCAP at Barnes & Noble, which is a really, really great, it's a great location for an author, boy, oh boy. You always want to be, if you can, either you want to be on that table right at the front of the store, or if you're not on that table right at the front of the store, you want to be on the NCAP. And I don't know how many weeks, now months, she's just adding it up all the time. And Carol J. Perry is a wonderful, wonderful author. And I'm going to have her back on pretty soon, too. She's simply, I don't know if she has a book coming out. I just like to talk to her. So check out her books, too, especially if you go to Barnes & Noble. It's wonderful to just, you know, in the afternoon, just get out of the house, get out of the work, and just sit in Barnes & Noble, go through some books, pick some up, and have a coffee and read, because that's what you have to do if you want to be a writer. And so many of you tell me that you want to write. But as I said, this is the beginning of the year, and if you start writing a page a day, this can happen. You can, you know, in a year you'll say, ah, I have a book. Because remember what I always tell you, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action. And your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't know unless you start writing. So pick up that pencil, warm up that computer, whatever you have to do, and start writing. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody today, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for everything. Sorry about that mess with the girl from Alaska, but we will get her on soon. Okay, and he's saluting me, and I'm saluting him. Bye-bye now, everybody. Have a great weekend.